Samadhi, the fourth spiritual faculty or spiritual sense, covers the whole field of what we often call in this country concentration and meditation. Samadhi means literally the fixation of the mind on a single object. In other words, one-pointedness of mind. This shouldn't, of course, be done forcibly, as I've mentioned on other occasions. Samadhi, concentration, meditation, fixation of the mind, or one-pointedness, is really, one may say, a sort of unification of the total energies of the psyche. Most of our mental forces, our mental energies, are scattered. But samadhi consists in drawing them all together into a single focus of energy, as it were. Now in the Pali scriptures, in the Sanskrit scriptures too, in their translations, samadhi, in the deeper and fuller sense, is often spoken of in terms of the four dhyanas. The four dhyanas represent, we may say, progressively purer and clearer states of consciousness or superconsciousness, attained as the energies progressively become more and more unified. Now, unfortunately, these four dhyana states are usually described by writers on Buddhism, especially the scholarly writers, in a very dryly analytical manner. You'd hardly think you were dealing with living experiences at all. It's a catalogue of different mental functions very often. But the spirit of these dhyanas, of these higher states of consciousness, more unified states of consciousness, is brought out very well by the Buddha in four famous similes. So leaving aside all the psychological analysis, leaving aside all the lists of constituent mental functions, let's just recapitulate these four similes, one for each of the four dhyanas. The Buddha said that the first is like this. He said, suppose you get a plate full of soap powder. In ancient India, they did have soap. Probably surprised you, there's a soap tree. It's not mineral soap. It's an enormous fruit which is dried and powdered, and it acts just like soap. They still use it in some parts of South India. So the Buddha said, it's just like a plate full of this soap powder, which is gradually mixed with water. So he said, water is mixed into it and mixed into it. And the whole ball of soap powder mixed with water is kneaded until you've got a ball. A ball which is absolutely saturated with water. There's not a single grain, not a single speck of soap powder which is not saturated with water. At the same time, there's just enough water, not too much. There's no water, as it were, trickling out from the ball. The ball is fully saturated. There's enough water, but not too much. So the Buddha said, the first state or the first stage is like that. When you meditate, you're filled, you're saturated with this higher consciousness, with a peace or with a bliss which fills every part of the mind, as it were, every part of the body. You're permeated with that feeling, that sensation, that experience, just as the power is permeated with the water. But there isn't a single drop, as it were, in excess. Nothing bubbles over. You're just permeated. So that's the first state, the first stage. Then the second dhyana, the Buddha said, is like a tank of water. Perfectly clear, pure water with a subterranean spring. All the time, fresh, clear water is bubbling up from beneath, filling the tank or preventing the water there from decreasing. So in the same way, he said, the second dhyana is a clear, pure state of consciousness in which, or into which, something is bubbling up all the time from deep within you. A bliss or a joy or a rapture in this state or in this stage. That's the second. Then in the third, the Buddha said, it's just like a pond or a tank full of lotuses. The lotus flowers live immersed in the water. They're distinct from the water, but they're immersed in it. Their stalks, their leaves, their flowers, blossoms, seed pods, everything, as it were, is immersed in the water, drinking the water, full of the water. But they themselves are, as it were, distinct from the water. So he said the third stage, or the third stage, is like that. Then the fourth stage, or the first stage, the Buddha again uses a very Indian sort of comparison. He said it like a very hot day You're all hot and dusty. You go and take a bath in a river or a tank. You come out and you wrap yourself in a white, clean, cold sheet. And you just sit there after your bath, enveloped in this white sheet. So the Buddha said the fourth stage, or first, fourth state of samadhi, or dhyana, is like that. You're perfectly clean and pure, and you're sort of insulated from all the surroundings by this force, as it were, generated in the course of the samadhi, or the dhyana. So these are the four comparisons which he gave for these four successively pure and clear states of consciousness or super consciousness. But of course, even samadhi, even concentration and meditation, can go to extremes. What's the extreme here? The extreme, as you were, of inertness or passivity. Or, on the lower levels, even of slothfulness, even of laziness, drowsiness, even sleepiness. Sometimes in India, you can see this sort of thing. You say to someone, well, what were you doing? He said, oh, I was just meditating. Really, he was just sort of dozing his time away, but he sort of says he's meditating. He's a sort of honorary meditator. So samadhi must be balanced, and it must be balanced by virya, especially virya in the form of good works, physical labor even. In the Zen monasteries of Japan, as in the Chan monasteries of China in the old days, of course, you get your full share of both. I forget how many hours a day meditation you have. It's probably 8 or 10 or something like that. An almost equal number of hours of hard physical work. Not just a little arranging a few flowers or just pulling aside a curtain or anything like that, but hard physical work, very often down on your hands and knees, scrubbing floors, scouring utensils with sand and things of that sort. Not so long ago I had a letter from Peggy Kennett, whom some of you may remember, who is now a Zen teacher in Japan after many years of labor and trouble. And she wrote to me that in her little monastery, where she has 3 or 4 disciples, their daily program begins at, I think she said, 4 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken. From 4 till 9, they do apparently things like scrubbing floors and scouring dishes and sweeping the veranda and sweeping the paths and chopping firewood from 4 until about 9. Then they have a simple meal, and then they get down to their meditation. Also, I think, for 4 or 5 hours. And then another light meal in the afternoon. That's their life, she said. Physical labor and concentration and meditation. So here one sees a balance. If they were spending all their time in meditation, certainly the comparative novices, you can be quite sure they just become slothful and lazy. On the other hand, if they were spending all their time in physical labor, unless they were exceptionally gifted, they'd eventually become just hewers of wood and drawers of water, just leading a brutal sort of existence. So both must be there. So much meditation, so much physical effort, and so on. Balanced. One can also say that this particular pair, virya or vigor, and samadhi, concentration and meditation, can be explained in terms of introversion and extroversion, in Jungian terms. That is to say, the one in whom samadhi predominates is the introvert, and the one in whom virya or energy predominates is the extrovert. But the enlightened person, of course, even the person who is not enlightened but spiritually quite developed, would be beyond this sort of classification. It wouldn't be possible to say of them either that they were introvert or that they were extrovert. I remember some time ago one of my monk friends gave it as his opinion to me that an introvert was particularly suitable for Buddhism. I suppose he was thinking an introvert would meditate more, but I don't think it is quite like this. And we have to balance both the introversion, meditation, and the extroversion, the good works. Otherwise, certainly in the earlier stages of our spiritual career, we may tend to go to either one of these extremes.